Welcome to this special edition of the podcast to be named later. A little bit of a spring training edition. We've missed you guys. I'm Tommy Ransell in studio with Eric Hammond and Jason Collette. And we're going to do things a little bit different, guys. Instead of talking about the team that we love and we cover on a daily basis, we're going to go ahead and kind of get into the rivals, hit up all four teams in the AL East and kind of just go over what they've done this offseason. And not only have the Rays had a tough offseason with losing everybody, but it seems that everybody in the division is not only a smart team, but they've made additions that should make them better, which makes defending the AL East crown a little bit more difficult. So, first of all, how are you guys doing?
Good, man. Good. It's been a long time since we've been back in here for one of these episodes. Probably since, what, June?
Blowing dust off. Sorry here, guys. Oof.
Yeah, nice it's probably been since June.
Since June-ish, yeah.
Like I said, we haven't lost any Friday games in a couple months, so that's good. We have that going for us.
Our record's intact. All right.
And yeah, just so you know, we got the process report 2011 coming out, and that's really going to be, you know, our gift to you guys to kind of get you ready for the season. We did things a little bit different this year, and the fact that we wanted it to be a reference guide for the entire season. It's not mm-hmm. just a retrospective on what happened last year and kind of, hey, here's what's going on for next year. We wanted to put something together where, you know, in June, if you're watching a game and you see something or a situation comes up, you say, you know, I remember seeing something about that in the process report and something you can be able to go grab and kind of check and verify or, you know, debunk something that we said. So that's really where we're going to cover the Rays this offseason and going into the season. But we wanted to hit the rivals. We're going to have some of that stuff in the process report, but we wanted to, you know, give you a little bit of a preview on what's going on, and we'll start with the team who I personally feel is our biggest rivals, the Boston Red Sox. You know, they may not see it that way, but I guess because 2008 season was such a special season, and they were the team that we battled on the field, literally, you know, and we had that epic, you know, ALCS game 7 was a moment that none of us will ever forget. So, and then last season, you know, they kind of had a difficult season. They won a lot of games.
Unlucky, too, more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they had a pretty good season considering the, you know, the lineup that they were running.
Pedroia were hurt almost the whole season.
I mean, they were still down there the final week of the season. Still, for the, you know, causing
the wild
problems.
Card.
Yeah, they were still there. People were still sweating out that final series against the Yankees. So, you know, a lot of worse teams. I was making an argument sometime towards the end of the season that Francona deserved a lot more credit for manager of the year.
They're better than Texas was, really, but they didn't get in the playoffs.
Yeah. And so, you know, last season they kind of had what they called a bridge year. You know, they signed a couple of guys. They signed
Marco Scudero and Adrian Beltre.
And Adrian Beltre. You know, Beltre was a one-year deal. It was kind of, hey, this guy's out there. You know, he really didn't fit the team in terms of, like, they really didn't have an opening. They made it work with, you know, with Lowell getting hurt and shifting Euclid around. So, you know, it worked, and you know, obviously it worked for Beltre cashing in this offseason, but, you know, it wasn't the approach they took this year, which is, you know, let's get the best available talent.
No one was really out there either, you know, last season.
I mean, they could have traded for Adrian Gonzalez last year, you know, but they didn't. But this year, it may be a coincidence that, you know, they missed the playoffs and now it looks like they're going all in. And, you know, but they gave up premium talent for Adrian Gonzalez. They go out there and give Crawford the ridiculous $142 million contract. And it's a little bit of a, hey, we're back, you know, kind of announcing them. You know, they kind of
announces the presence with authority.
Yeah, you know, we were gone last year, but now we're back. And looking everywhere, that because of the additions that they've made with Crawford and Gonzalez, a lot of people are picking them to win the division after missing it last year.
Yeah, it's I'm curious to see when the new Pecota projections come out for the standings over at Baseball Prospectus. I'm curious to see where they have them. If you remember last year, they actually had the Red Sox in third place with the Rays ahead of them at 98 wins. That almost came out. So curious to see where that all shakes out. Right now, obviously, people are already saying they're going to win at least 100 games. with it, which is, you know, kind of depressing.
There was that one article where they said they were going to be the best team since the
27 Yankees. Oh, yeah, that's going to be fun.
98 Yankees, shoot. Go,
or the, what, 01 Mariners, or whatever Mariners. That was. Yeah, right? Yeah, so that's going to be quite interesting to see all that. I mean, no pressure at all. The expectations are already sky high, and the first pitch has not even been thrown down in Fort Myers yet by anybody.
And, you know, we talked about the upgrades and the offense with Crawford and Gonzalez, but you know they are losing Gonzalez. They did lose Victor Martinez, so you know.
But again, you know, Euclid is here for the whole year. Pedroia back for the whole season, so that's gonna be a big upgrade.
Ellsbury, we'll see what they
Hall
get.
Hall isn't in there this year, so that's gonna be a big upgrade.
Yeah, but they also did some moves, you know, that weren't of, you know, the giant Crawford magnitude, with shoring up the bullpen. You know, last year Papelbon was
not good.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, he was their second best reliever behind Bard, but he was the one that was closing games. Now you can argue that he's, you know, the fourth best reliever, and he, you know, he's still going to be the closer. He's still going to hold that title, but that bullpen is a lot stronger than it was.
I saw a note. I was watching MLB Network on one of these countdown things they're having. They're talking about 10 best relievers in baseball, and somebody was trying to make an argument for Papelbon belonging in the top three.
Top three at all baseball?
Based on how much he's getting paid.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you left off a zero there. He belongs in top 30, but not top three. But I agree. You know, the bullpen's a lot better. Obviously, you know, Bard was making strides, adding Jinx and all, you know, skates, you know, Wheeler going over there. That's obviously going to help getting tough right-handed batters out, and you never know what they're going to add. I don't even remember what their non-roster invitees look like. I'm sure it doesn't look as deep as ours.
I think there's Matt Albers is a guy that they brought in.
Hey, there's UCF grad Matt Fox, so there's one. Tony Pena, that's a guy to keep an eye on. Yeah, but outside of that, their bullpen situation looks pretty settled.
Yeah, but and you look at it, and I mentioned that, you know, Papelbon is the closer. He's getting paid to be the closer. He'll end up, if this team pans out like everybody thinks, with 40, 45 saves, you know, something like that.
He'll be type A and be gone.
Yeah, he'll get paid, and he's the closer. But you look at the model, and he's literally at least the second or third best reliever. You know, I think Bard is better, and if you were going to just
Jinx was great last year.
Yeah, you know, Bobby Jinx is probably better than Papelbon, but you know, because Papelbon has done it before, and he has, you know, the closer's mentality and stuff like that, nobody's making any reference that, you know what, maybe Bard should be closing. We're here, you know, in our team, maybe Farnsworth is the third best reliever, but he'll end up closing for us, and that's a huge deal. Like, you know, why is this guy closing? Meanwhile, the Red Sox are doing it, and because the guy has done it before and he makes a lot of money, it's not that big of a deal.
I mean, you would think with a team payroll of, what, $165 million, whatever ridiculous number they're at these days, that they could justify taking Papelbon out of that role and putting the best pitcher in the bullpen in that closer role.
But do you necessarily want to do that, though? Because, your most important outs, and we've talked about
we don't care. But I'm talking about a fan base or anything else. Yeah. You know, they're going to be like, oh, my God, Papelbon has to pitch now. I can't even do the accent. Papelbon has to pitch the ninth or something along those lines.
Yeah,
but that's where
that's where having a smart GM comes in, where he says, all right, I'll pay Papelbon. I have the extra money, you know, I have the resources to go ahead and pay this guy like an elite closer. He's still a really good relief pitcher. I mean, if you take the money out of it, you know, I definitely, you know, that's a guy I'd love to have in my bullpen because his ability,
$12 million,
if you take money away, that guy's a legitimate top relief pitcher. Not saying closer or elite, but you know, that guy's definitely somebody you want in your bullpen. So the fact that they can, you know, they can spend it and it lets Epstein, you know, go out and get these other guys who are going to get, you know, Bard and Jenks are going to be getting really crucial outs.
Dan Wheeler is too, really.
Yeah,
We saw what Wheeler did in 08, 09, he picked up 13 saves. One of the years, cleaning up the mess that Percival left around. So, I mean, truth be told, Papelbon's never going to earn that kind of contract anyhow. It doesn't really matter where he pitches. It's sunk cost. You had to pay him because you can't let a guy like that who's guaranteed to bring you back two first-round draft picks.
Yeah, just
after this,
you're not going to non-tender that guy.
So they were, you know, in a bind over a barrel. So, you know, yeah, he had his problems towards the end of last year. But again, he knew it. They knew it. They couldn't just let that guy walk. Unless they were to get Mariano Rivera. You heard about there were some overtures they reached out to Rivera. You want to believe it or not.
Yeah,
but if they would have done that, then Papelbon, then you can justify Papelbon walking because you know, then get Rivera and you give a gut punch to the Yankees.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're looking at it, if he's the third best reliever on that staff, and if you have Bard and Jenks and Wheeler, not saying that Wheeler's above him, but, you know, Wheeler getting tough outs against a righty, you know, then you bring him in that ninth inning with a, you know, assuming that he's only going to be coming in with the
lead. Yeah.
Nobody on base, you know, fresh in there. He's going to be, you know, a soft landing. He's going to come in there, get those three outs, depending on, you know, who's in the lineup. These guys before him will have taken out the toughest competition, the toughest situations.
Right.
And, you know, that's a guy who can easily shut down, you know, any three guys in baseball. So you give him a lead. You give him, you know, coming into it'll be a high leverage in terms of, you know, ninth inning game on the line, but nobody on base, and that guy's just going to rack up the saves. The one, you know, we talked about the lineup, we talked about the bullpen being very solid. The one area where they may be the weakest is the rotation, and I mean, they have studs, Lester, Buchholz, you know, at the top of that rotation, but there's some question marks with their more established guys. Lackey, you know, kind of struggled in his first year, yeah, up and down, and then, you know,
Josh Beckett
was hurt. You know, he was missing for most of the season. Daisuke Matsuzaka, you know, he racks up those wins, but he's, you know, a glorified fifth starter. So behind those two horses, you know, there's a lot of question marks going in there, and they got Wakefield and stuff like that. But with a team that's built like that, with an awesome bullpen,
they need it now.
Yeah, you know,
that pen now,
and the lineup. Never. You know, that rotation. If Beckett sustains another injury and Matsuzaka is inconsistent again, you know, you're putting a lot of pressure on those front two guys, and hoping Lackey can rebound.
Younger guys too, you know. So
yeah, it's. I mean, I was looking at the Pecota projections for those guys. You know, for Beckett, Lackey, and Matsuzaka, they have projected ERAs of 3.95 or higher. You know. And while Lester and Buchholz are 348 and 365. So even the projection systems are looking at him saying, okay, those are basically three innings eaters. They're performing like innings eaters with those kind of numbers. And, you know, name value wise, Beckett, people think of him as a staff ace, which he's not. Lackey, staff ace, which he's not. Yeah. So it's really one of these things.
Matsuzaka's still getting, I mean,
he's getting paid more than all contract.
Like, yeah. I said, somebody told me about a nice prop bet for 2011. Who's going to have more walks, Matsuzaka on the mound or Ortiz at the plate? And I think that's a pretty tough prop bet to take. I'm going to go with Matsuzaka on the mound.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you know, so that pretty much sums up the Red Sox. They're going to be much better than they were last year, not only because of the talent, but because you would think the injuries,
they're going
to
be great.
For that to happen 2 years ago, for them to sustain, you know, that many injuries 2 years in a row would be just, you know, something unimaginable. So not only were they a talented team last year, they won a lot of games, they made a lot of noise in September, but, you know, they were missing a lot of guys. Darnell McDonald was, you know, pretty much an everyday player for them. So
Bill Hall was
everyday player. They're going to have a lot of guys coming back. They're going to have a lot of new guns, reworked bullpen. You know, that team is definitely going to be there. And the team that we battled that was there last year with us was the New York Yankees. And they've had an interesting offseason. A lot of people,
they haven't done too much.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about what the Rays lost, and we lost Crawford, Pena, you know, the
Jason Bartlett.
On and on.
Yeah, forget him. Come on.
Yeah, team MVP 2008. We lost so many guys. But the Yankees lost out on a lot of guys too. And it wasn't coming off their roster. It was, you know, losing out on guys.
Cliff Lee was the biggest one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything for their offseason was, you know, surrounding getting Cliff Lee. When that fell apart, you know, people like to make fun of the Rays for signing, you know,
Kyle Farnsworth.
Well, the old guys, you know, Kyle Farnsworth, yeah, the Manny and Damon. Yeah. But good God, the Yankees just signed the 2002 All-Star team.
Bartolo Colon,
the guys
and
they
Garcia.
Added are a bunch of guys that see their prime years ago. And yeah, it's just a you never expect to see this kind of offseason. I don't
That's
know
like
if it's the Steinbrenners.
We would have done here, you know, oh, with those old guys.
Yeah, this would have been something the Devil Rays would have done.
Hideo Nomo offseason.
It's just very strange to see that kind of, you know, Andy Cisco, Mark Pryor, Bartolo Colon, Freddie Garcia. It's just an odd offseason. You don't expect to see this.
And then recently, the Andy Pettitte thing really kind of...
Hurt him.
Andy Pettitte was we lost out on Cliff Lee, you know. We got these guys. We got Nova. We got Mitre. These guys are back end guys. If we can get Pettitte in there behind Sabathia, Burnett, Hughes, that gives you, you know, a quality four. And then the fifth guy you figure out. Now, with Pettitte being out, Sabathia is obviously top, one of the top pitchers in baseball. He's your anchor. Burnett, for all the flack that he gets, I mean, that you know, playing in New York obviously magnifies it. He's not,
but he gets paid too.
Really, yeah, he gets paid a lot. You know, he's not great. You know, but, right. but he, you know, he's a solid guy in the rotation. I think Hughes can be a solid guy in the rotation. But now without Pettit, you're looking at having two guys
trusting a lot of innings to guys who
two
have,
guys, yeah,
haven't done
you,
it before.
You listed Freddie Garcia, Colon, all those guys prior. Maybe one of those guys pans out, but the hope would be, okay, that guy is a fifth starter. We really don't care. Now you're looking at two guys from that group, you know, to pitch 400 innings or something like that in New York.
Right. I mean, think of that, and they, you know, we didn't even talk about Ivan Nova or Sergio Mitre, who were already there, who were at best fifth starters. I mean, Ivan Nova is pretty much a bullpen guy. He was out of gas.
Mitre is now, too,
60.
Really.
And Mitre is a bullpen guy.
Yeah, but now he's not. Because he,
yeah, now one of these, I mean, you're looking at your fourth or fifth guy coming from either one of those two guys, or Garcia or Colon, you know, that kind of situation. And this is why, you know, getting back to our team, this is why our team is not out of the playoff contention, because after the Red Sox, there is no clear-cut favorite, you know, for a wild card team. If you're assuming the wild card team is coming out of this division,
or
I'm more
A's
concerned
the
about
West,
the West.
But,
yeah. The A's, exactly. I'm more concerned about the A's than I am the Yankees right now, unless something changes.
They can always, you know, trade and everything, because that's what, you know,
that's the thing with the Yankees.
They can take on whatever they need to take on midseason.
The one thing is Cashman has been, you know, unwilling to give up his prospect, which is, you know, people say, why is he doing it? It's probably the best move for the organization. You have this young talent, even though they have unlimited, it seems, resources in terms of money. Yep. You know, they have a lot of premium talent at that minor league level, that getting closer every year to, you know, to seeing some prime time action. And one of those guys is Jesus Montero, who, you know, I got a chance to see in Tampa when he was over here,
right,
playing for the Tampa Yankees, and the guy can just hit.
But can he catch? And
yeah,
that's the question.
And you know, now with Jorge kind of, you know, setting off into the sunset as the DH.
Right.
You know, the Yankees, they signed Russell Martin, Francisco Cervelli is obviously there, and Montero, you're in that new kind of phase of catcher, and who's going to take over that position.
Well, you mentioned earlier trade, if you were to believe what's been reported, apparently Jesus Montero was offered to the Royals for Joaquin Soria.
Yeah.
And you know, if either GM actually either offered that or declined it, they both should lose their jobs. But you know, if Dayton Moore was offered that and declined it, he should lose his job.
He needs to
It's part of the process, guys. I mean, you're not you're losing sight.
I know, it's the process thing. You know, you got to
listen.
Both trade for
Dayton Moore signed Kyle Farnsworth and
Juan Cruz
2 years ago.
Yeah.
And where
they're
now
in our bullpen.
See, he was just ahead of the curve on the process.
So who has he signed this year? So we
Jeff Francoeur.
Yeah, Jeff Francoeur will be our right fielder in 2015, and Pedro Feliz will replace Evan Longoria after the 2016 season.
So yeah, there we go. That's kind of where the Yankees offseason. It just, again, it's strange. You know, they can always go out and get what they want.
Toriano, I mean,
yeah.
Did they want him or did they need him? I think they didn't really need him there. I think
this goes back to what we talked about with the Red Sox and what Jason said about Papelbon. You know, if you have the means to, you know, pay these guys all kinds of money, and wouldn't you want to put a guy to, you know, not just, you know, you're paying this guy, but then you cave into the fan. Oh, why is Papelbon?
It's the years, though, with him more than anything.
Yeah, but
contract.
But I'm saying Cashman didn't want to do the deal. He went out of his way to say it, but it was the Yankees, the brass, the Steinbrenners, that kind of caved into that pressure that said, okay, because we have this money,
we're going to give
it to this guy. And, you know, Soriano was great for us, fantastic 2 years now, but you know, you're looking at a guy who has never been healthy for 3 years in a row. So
right.
You're going to ask him to, you know, be on this third year.
And it's him. And it's his. They're his options, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're his options. They're not team options or player options.
Man, if those allergies really get bad again in March, he just might keep riding that out.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at this guy who's had a pretty miserable experience in the free agent market. Last year, he was type A guy. You know, decided to accept arbitration last minute. You know, he couldn't find a deal. This year, he got his deal and
he got what he wanted to get paid, but he had not Yeah.
It took the Yankees took the Yankees losing out Lee, you know, not being able to get a premium guy to come there, and he's giving up the closer's role, you know, to set up Rivera, which is great, you know.
And that's one of the things he bitched about when I, you know, talked to some of the people that covered him in Atlanta. And he openly bitched about not getting all the save opportunities and having to share them with Mike Gonzalez even back then. So now you're looking at a thing where he's, you know, going to a place where there's no way he's going to save unless Rivera's closed four games in a row or somehow gets hurt.
Give him some time off now.
Right.
Yeah.
He's getting older.
And, you know, you look at it, he holds all the power. So just say next year he doesn't rack up many saves. He gets 5 to 10 saves. He's not going to command $12 million on an open market unless...
But he'll have his option for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, so there's a chance that he comes back again. And like you said, this guy's an injury risk. John Smoltz, former teammate, said, you know, when we got Soriano here, his first question was, well, how long is the deal? And when he heard it was a one-year deal, he said, all right, you'll be good. So, you know, I hate to speculate on makeup and stuff like that. I've never met Soriano. I'm not his teammate or something like that, but... You know, John Smoltz saying that holds some weight, I guess. You know, if you're going to the Rays have this offseason, a lot of makeup. This guy has great makeup. This guy is, you know, this guy has fantastic, you know, work ethic. Mm-hmm. So stuff like that has been, you know, pounded into our heads this offseason. And if there's a question there, you know, and this guy's holding the money, then, you know.
It's gonna be interesting to watch to see how, you know, Girardi keeps him motivated. And we saw, I made the crack about his allergies earlier. I mean, this is a guy that really didn't pitch for the Rays in spring training until March 10th.
He
didn't
want to. Going to be a fantastic story when he shows up to Tampa. The first week of games go by and he doesn't make an appearance, and the beat writer starts saying, "What's wrong with Soriano?" And Soriano says,
"He's just a weird guy.
He's got to pretend not to speak English."
It works for him. I mean, it worked last year. He knows his body at this point. And I didn't have a problem when he did it last year for the Rays. Whatever. You know, I'd rather you be able to pitch in September than you be able to pitch in March. But in that media market where, you know, he's the marquee draw in terms of what they brought in, for him to, he's going to do things on his own terms, not the Yankee way, not pitch when he, you know, in a Grapefruit League game. He's going to make his own schedule. That's going to be wonderful, and I feel bad for our friends over at River Avenue Blues. You're going to have to deal with that, but you know
they're going to like it.
I mean, one of the things, I mean, the local media here, you know, he's able to get away with that because they're not going to press him. I mean, all we would see is Soriano is yet to pitch in a game. He's closer.
And
to
Joe Madden wouldn't let that.
Yeah,
be an
and
issue.
Joe Madden never even acknowledged. I mean, he did a great job of tempering that, and I think Girardi can do that too. But at the same time, you're going to get a New York Post beat writer who's going to want a picture for the back. You know, he's going to put Soriano on a milk carton.
Yeah,
where
Soriano,
is his picture?
Exactly.
Yeah, so somebody, he's not going to be able to get away with it. And even when he did pitch, I mean, didn't he have a couple of outings where he just went out there and just laid it over and got blasted? But he goes, hey, I know I'm going to get ready.
Yeah, he's getting his work in. Exactly. Yeah. And like you said, in the grand scheme of things, he knows what he's doing. But, you know, in that market and everything, it's going to be something fun to watch from afar, you know, not having to deal with that whole
circus.
I hope
it blows up.
Yeah. We all hope so, but.
And, you know, we've talked about, you know, the way the Yankees do things and the way the Red Sox do things. And obviously they have smart GMs. I mean, you're talking two top five GMs right there. Friedman is a top five GM. And now Toronto has a top five GM.
Ugh.
I mean, this guy.
And they're in Tampa Bay, but just, you know, in Canada.
You're going to have a hard time convincing me that the Jays don't have a plant in the Rays front office, because it seems like their entire offseason was stealing targets for the Rays. I mean, five guys. Encarnacion, Frank Francisco.
John Roush,
Octavio Dotel, and
Napoli, really, if you want
and
to
And Mike
that.
Napoli, really. Yeah. I mean, all five of those guys were tied closely to the Rays and rumors, and all five of them were wearing a Blue Jays uniform for at least one day before they got traded away.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you just look at the additions that they've made, and obviously they've had to give up some talent recently. You know, they traded away
Sean Markham.
Traded away.
That's going to hurt. That's going to hurt them.
But you look at the other moves, too. The Vernon Wells deal.
That was unbelievable.
He's GM of the year already just for getting rid of that albatross of a contract.
I mean, you look at what they were saddled with in, let's see, July of 2009. You had Alex Rios underperforming, huge contract.
Well, gave him away
$60 million.
Right.
Gave him away.
You had Vernon Wells with
$81 million.
So you can argue that giving away Rios's talent was not an upgrade on the field like that. You know, that giving away free talent, and Rios is a five-tool guy.
Right.
But the contract, he wasn't living up to the contract. So they were able to shed themselves of the contract, which in itself was, you know, kind of a good move for them. Then the Wells deal. So they shed $140 million off of future payroll. And now you got news that, you know, the Rodgers owners are going to start pumping money back into this team. And now they'll have the money because they've cleared away all this space. They have some young talent. You know, they seem to know, they seem very good, like the Rays, and okay, this is what we have. And now we can find these supplemental pieces. The Dotel, the Roush, flipping Napoli
for Francisco. Yeah.
I mean, you're getting, you know, you got three pieces in the bullpen for
Edwin's there as the DH now.
Yeah, roughly for what, you know,
right.
I mean, Soriano's making.
It's
going to
be a different
guys.
Team from what you mean. Last year, these guys hit 257 home runs, which was 46 more than anybody else
see
in the
ball,
American League.
Hit ball, that's all.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, grip it and rip it. And they, you know, they lose Wells, and they gain Rivera, which is not that's not going to close it. And yeah. Aaron Seabee is bringing his 30 home runs from AAA. But a lot of that, you know.
No walks.
That's, PCL.
But their whole team, you know, didn't ever walk anyway.
It's going to be tough. Honestly, it's going to be tough to see them hit 200 home runs this year, basically what's on the
year. Hill's going to be okay this year, though.
Hill should be fine. I love Edwin Encarnacion as a DH, as long as you have to play the field. I mean, E5, no field. So.
And then you got Snyder is what's going to happen there. You know,
right.
Is this guy, you know, we've been hearing about him and hearing about him. Is he actually going to do something now?
Yeah, you got right now. You got Rajah Davis. If the guy could ever figure out how to get on base more than 33% of the time, he's a dangerous guy.
He's not going to ever do that, though.
But that's not something he's never been able to do. But it's interesting, and of course, in the pitching staff with Ricky Romero, Brett Cecil, and Brett Morrow, that's a pretty talented three. I think any team in baseball would take that. Like to have those.
And then, and even the guys that they're bringing in on the back end, unlike the Yankees, who are bringing in these you know, retread, Cologne, and Garcia, these guys have some upside at the back end.
Yeah,
Jesse Lynch is a quality guy. He just missed time with injury.
Chinsky is not bad.
Yeah, I mean, so
right. And Kyle Drabek.
Kyle Drabek. Yeah, we all know what,
you know, limited
he's going to do.
But
yeah,
Kyle Drabek was, you know,
the main thing,
got his dad's curveball and then some.
Halliday too.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have a front three of Morrow, Romero, Cecil, if Drabek, you know, turns into a quality
an adequate
pitcher,
number four starter, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at him to be the number four in that where years ago, you know, as a prospect, number one starter, number two starter was projection. So if he's your four, and then you got quality guys at the back end, Lynch, Repchisky battling for that spot. You know, that's a pretty good rotation. You could argue behind the Rays rotation that's probably
within the division. Yeah,
it might be the second best, rotation.
I mean, let's look at it. Let's say the five guys are Romero, Morrow, Cecil, Drabek, and Repchisky. Let's say that's five. So you got two high strikeout righties and you got three lefties in a division where everybody struggles against lefties.
Yep.
So especially Boston, they'll bring those guys into Boston. That's why these guys were paying the butt last year. They got 85 wins despite their problems. I mean, their bullpen was good. Their offense was a home run or nothing.
Runs. That's all
that
they did.
That was their offense. But
guys,
I mean,
on base, but
these guys gave everybody fits last year all the way down the stretch to send Gaston out the door. But to have those three lefties in this division, they're loaded with lefties and guys that struggle against lefties like Carl Crawford and such.
David Ortiz,
J.D. Drew,
for that matter.
So it's going to be an interesting team to watch. I think the 85 wins is definitely repeatable for Toronto. I just don't know what their ceiling is.
And then, so that's this year. And then you look at what they've accumulated in terms of picks. They did stuff similar to the Rays, where, you know, they've accumulated number of draft picks going forward.
Who they get from Colorado again? I forgot.
They got Miguel Olivo.
Just
to get
the draft pick,
supplemental pick.
That's a
fantastic move. You know, giving up a little bit of talent in return, you get a supplemental pick, and what everybody's saying this year is a deep draft. I'm not a draft guy. I don't look at this stuff until I have to.
Yeah.
But, you know, all these guys and are saying
Keith Law and everybody are saying this is the deepest draft in years.
So, you know, to be able to turn a low-level minor league guy, you know, a guy that you've watched and then flip him for a potential second-round pick, you know, that's a raise move. And like you said, where you think that, you know, they have a leak in the Rays front office in terms of guys that they target, their philosophy is very, you know, similar to the Rays where they do – these outside the box things. The Wells trade is an outside the box. We trade Vernon Wells for Mike Napoli, shed Wells's contract. Then we're going to
take our Kazmir deal.
Yeah,
really.
Then we're going to take Napoli and flip him for a guy that we want in Frank Francisco.
Yep.
I mean,
well done.
That is something that you could say. You know, Friedman would have did that. You know, if he could.
Right. I mean, we heard when Anthopoulos was on our good friend Jonah Carey's podcast. How, you know, how much he appreciated and respected Andrew Friedman's work. You know, as I probably speak for all three of us, I think we're getting to be the same way with Anthopoulos. Very rarely has he done something we're like, that move sucked. No, the guy's been right there, step ahead of the other
Tampa
team.
Bay and
We get accused of being, you know, Rays homers. We love every move, and, you know,
we tell people how to think.
Yeah, we never. We never take shots at the organization. It's not really true.
They don't do things.
The thing is that
did they not read our Casey Kotchman?
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
he's not going to make the
team.
Even
the Casey Kotchman has probably been the most critical thing any of us has been on this offseason. And you look at it; it's a minor league deal.
Yeah,
Kotchman had success.
Catch the ball in the spring. That's all he's going to do.
But it wasn't like Mark Kotze getting a guaranteed major league deal.
Yeah, when you look at it, I mean. You can still, even though you don't agree with the move, I don't think any of us see Kotchman as doing anything significant, but you look at the move and you can understand the process. Okay, we have Dan Johnson as our guy. Behind Dan Johnson.
Ben Zobrist.
But I'm talking about I'm talking about raw. You know, natural first baseman.
Yeah,
you got
no
Johnson. You got Russ Kanzler, who's pretty much a third base, first base guy.
Chris Richard.
Chris
Carter,
the team.
Chris Carter, who we got
from
the Mets,
who should not wear a glove.
Yeah, so you're looking at these guys, and so you can say, all right, nobody's expecting Kotchman to do anything, but you can appreciate the process of, all right, this guy's a local kid. He's probably hanging around the area. Let's give him a minor league deal, see what happens. And if Kotchman can hit for league average with a good glove, then you know what? You know, it's a
he
good deal.
He can't do those things, but if he could,
it'd
be
worth,
great.
But at the tender of a minor league contract, it's worth seeing what you have.
Right.
And if Johnson, like I said, just say we all have Johnson penciled in and we all like Johnson probably a lot more than everybody else. If something were to happen to Johnson, you know, you have Zobrist, you have Rodriguez, you have Damon to some extent. But, you know, none of those guys have seen significant action where if Johnson goes down with, you know, a horrible injury, and we hope he doesn't, you know, you have Kotchman who can bat ninth in the lineup but be a serviceable first baseman, and you hope everybody else picks up the lost offensive production. So even that move, you can understand the process. And I think that's what, going back to the Jays, you can see process in all of their moves.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my whole thing, the biggest thing against the Kotchman thing was it seems to, you know, end any hope of Russell Branyan coming here, who I think fits that mold that you talked about to a T with more authority at the plate.
Yeah.
Who's still unsigned. So obviously there's probably something on the other side where
his injury history is really.
Yeah,
he either wants
there.
More money or his back.
Yeah, he's either looking for a guaranteed
major league deal.
What, a guaranteed millions. Yeah, or a two-year deal, or there's something that's coming up in that medical record that none of us. That's what, you know, we all speculate on who we should target, but that's one thing we can never, you know, attribute for. When I wrote about Juan Cruz in October, you know, the whole thing was based on if Juan Cruz is healthy.
If he's healthy, yeah,
this can work.
But I mean, the only thing with
Joaquin Benoit last year, if he's healthy, it was great.
But look at Kelvin Mascara. Kelvin Mascara was a guy that I probably liked more than Joaquin Benoit last year.
Exactly.
And, you know, this guy was
gripped the baseball.
Yeah, and he signed his contract and blew out his elbow signing the contract with the Mets. So that's something that, you know, we can attribute for. But, you know, looking at Brannion, on the outside looking in, it's like, this guy seems like a fit.
Well, you know, the other thing with Brannion, I'm just looking at this up now. He signed his deal last year on February 19th with the Indians. So if something's going to happen with him, it's going to be in the next few days because, you know, everybody, pitchers and catchers report tomorrow. First full workout, at least for the Rays, is on the 21st.
And not much has changed with Brannion. I mean, he had another productive season, but, you know, there's
missed
still
some time with step back. So
he hits homers.
Year older, he's a year older, so... You know, it took this until this time last year, and not much has changed except another productive year, a little bit more of injuries, and now he's a year older. So, you know, maybe there is something for a team that's looking for a first baseman. Maybe there's something, you know, with the Rays if the demands or something comes down. But like I said, the medical records is something that we don't know about. And, you know, that like ultimately the Rays have one of the best medical staffs. So
Coco Wheaton,
yeah,
my buddy, going in there tomorrow to get my hand looked at. All right.
Well, you know, so we think Toronto's going to be good. We think the Yankees.
We know they're going to be good. Yeah,
we know the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to be there, barring some catastrophe. The one team, you know, that everybody's kind of picking to be last place, besides the Bleacher Report, who picks the Rays to be last place, is Baltimore Orioles, and. Could you say that they're the best last place team in baseball? Because looking at talent,
this is
a talented team. They just happen to be in the most talented division.
You know, some of us get accused of irrational love with some things. Last year, I thought the Orioles were a lock to finish 500. I really liked them. I stuck my neck out, and they started out of the gate as badly as any team ever has, except for their 88 version of their
team. Showalter. Helped them out a ton. Apparently.
Showalter
turned around the whole organization.
They were a gigantic pain in the ass down the season. I mean, everybody, they were beating everybody.
They were very 2007 Rays-ish in the second half. If you remember, we went on that run.
Right.
And
New York at the end of the year, yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to see them make the leap that the 07 Rays to the 08 Rays did because that
they're
just so...
too old.
Yeah, and it was just... it was just so unexpected from our standpoint that, you know, the Rays finished well, but nobody was like, you know what, this is the year that we're going to go to the World Series. So, I mean, they finished out on a strong note with Showalter coming in. And then this offseason, they've just... They've
spent money.
They've made moves like a team that's willing to, you know, that wants to contend right now.
Right.
And, you know, some of them won't pan out. But you know, you look around the infield. Okay, you got Derek Lee now at first base.
Brian Roberts.
You know,
he always gets hurt, but
you know, he's still a good player.
Right. Well, I mean, 3/4 of their infield is brand new.
Yeah. JJ
Lee,
Hardy
and Reynolds. So that's...
yeah, and you look at Lee as probably, you know, he's the old guy. He's a 1 year type thing. But you look at JJ Hardy and Mark Reynolds, and those are two guys in, you know, in mid to late 20s that.
Yeah,
you know,
those are good additions.
Maybe they hit. I mean, last year, Toronto surprised everybody with all their home runs. I think the Orioles are going to do a lot of damage.
That park is tailor-made for
right-handed power hitters. J.J. Hardy, I mean, was penalized last year for playing in Target Field, which is not tailor-made for right-handed power, and he was coming off the wrist injury. Hardy's a guy, you know, I also do a lot of fantasy baseball. Hardy's a guy I have pegged to hit 18 to 20 home runs, which would be triple what he hit last year. He hit one home run in his home ballpark last year. Yeah, he'll do that the first week of the
season.
And
they almost ended up with Jason Bartlett instead.
Yeah, who would have hit
Reynolds
six home runs too.
Is, you know, going to go.
Reynolds is Carlos Pena, you know.
Exactly.
In a good environment. I mean, we see Carlos Pena did, you know, great in his time with the Rays. But, you know, Carlos Pena, if he gets some of those balls.
But last year
he had a ton of ground balls. If he can get some of those in the air in Wrigley Field, you know, that's tailored to left-handed batters. You know,
or how many NL Central managers are actually going to play the shift? They don't seem to be very, you know, defensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see a lot of that in the American League with, you know, against the Red Sox, against the Rays and all that. But even though I also pay attention to a lot of Astros games, having grown up in Houston, and you just don't see the kind of defensive positioning in the National League that you have in the American League East.
So, I mean, you could see Mark Reynolds, you know, a guy who's hit 40 home runs, you know, do that easily at third base. You got Wieters behind the plate.
What about Guerrero this year?
Well, Guerrero.
Old man Vlad.
Yeah, I mean, that. If you look at all the moves that they have made, that's the one move that you say, you know, that's the Kansas City Royal move where it's like,
exactly,
it's not an awful move. It's not 1 year for Vlad if this was the Texas Rangers.
1 year, great, but not for the cash that he's going to get.
Even for the cash, 1 year, $8 million, if this was the Texas Rangers, I see all
for
the
a
lot
team that's in,
but for the
contention.
Team, the team that's around 80 to 82 wins, Vlad gets you to 83, 84. It's not worth paying $8 million, especially when you have Luke Scott.
No one was going after Vlad that hard either.
Don't forget the mystery team. There's always a mystery team.
And you have internal options. You have Nolan Reimold, who is
and
a guy.
PA.
Yeah, Reimold is probably suited for the DH because of the injuries, because of the profile.
Luke Scott now has to go to the outfield, which is not going to work.
And by the way,
out.
I think I saw Luke Scott on his way down to spring training. I was behind a vehicle today that said, "Don't blame me, I voted for an American." So I think that was Luke Scott driving down to spring training.
That interview was so good. That's the best thing.
We were there watching it. Yeah. It was epic. I mean, the look on Dave Brown's face was, Tim Brown? One of the two.
No, it was Dave
Brown.
Oh,
Dave my Brown. God. Yeah. Everybody was walking away with their eyes wide open. It was just to witness it, to see the story behind the story.
Dave Brown had to be like, yes. This is awesome.
The best part of that is when the best part of that is when he walked by and everybody's like, "How's the interview?" And he goes, "I didn't get much out of it." That's what he told everybody. He sat down and typed that story.
Oh, that's awesome.
And just Twitter, he broke Twitter with that one.
Unbelievable.
Good times.
But yeah, so you look at the moves, the Vlad. I'll even throw in the Kevin Gregg move in there. They're not awful moves. They're not, you know.
Gregg got a 2-year deal, though, didn't he?
Yeah. But I mean, again, in this ridiculous market where Jesse Crane gets 3 years, you know, Kevin Gregg is a good guy. You know, he's a good relief pitcher. He pitched in the AL East. You know, he's proven in that. And, you know, if you're looking at a guy who can close games, this guy has the experience. He's proven that he can handle the ninth inning. So, but for a team that wins 80, 82 games, or at least set up to win, paying those guys that kind of money, I don't see how that really helps the team.
I mean, one of the things that hurts, if Kevin Gregg, good track record. Koji Uehara had a good year. The problem is you got Uehara, you got Gregg, you got Mike Gonzalez coming back. All three are extreme fly ball pitchers. We're talking like 55% in Camden yards. And we saw how Uehara blew a few games against the Yankees last year. Just a guy came in, you could see him almost pee his pants as he was getting up there on the mound. And then they lost to me, the guy that I thought was one of their better relievers, David Hernandez.
Yeah.
The guy was phenomenal in the second half, and then they move him in the Reynolds trade. So I think the bullpen shuffled the chairs, and the bullpen wasn't exactly a strong suit of this team, and this is where this team is being held back. Because offensively, they have the names and the production to get
the potential,
job
like
done.
I said, if Reynolds, Hardy, you know, Markakis comes back, Wieters.
Jones.
I see a lot of Jones. 7-6 That's games good. Here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I mean, so the offense is there. The rotation, Fishing, obviously, is
Mathis
young.
Is great, but yeah, behind they him, got, there's not know, got, too much else.
They got Britton. You know, they got Tillman. There's a couple of names here. And
they're names, but they're young.
Yeah, it's a matter. It's again, going back.
Millwood's
going
not there.
Back three
Justin
years,
Dukeshire, if Dukeshire can stay healthy longer.
It's
10,
very
time,
it's very 07-08 Rays where we had, you know, Price in the system. Shields was only a year in. You know, Kazmir was kind of in the Brian Mattis role, like, you know, the proven guy. So,
you know, you speak of 07 or 08 Rays. Let me read you the names on their non-roster invitee list. Mark Hendrickson, Josh Roop, Michelle Hernandez, Nick Green, Brendan Harris, and Randy Wynn.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's so, part of their non-roster invitee list.
Yeah, they're doing the reverse. So, you know, we're signing all Kansas City Royal guys.
They're signing old Rays. Yeah,
but I mean, so some of those guys.
Poor Randy Wynn.
Yeah, some of those guys can have value. I see Brendan Harris, you know, filling a Ty Wigginton type role on that
fall
team.
Down range role. Absolutely.
Yeah, hit a couple home runs, but again, they made a lot of moves. You know, I think they've upgraded in a lot of areas. Some moves were unnecessary for where the team is, but when you look at it, that off season had a pretty good, you know, that front office had a pretty good off season.
They're just in, you know, a tough division for that type of team to play in.
The Yankees easily had the worst off season of all the teams in this division,
and
the
they're
Orioles,
still in 90 games.
Orioles are arguably you've got an argument to put them in the top three.
Oh yeah, one of the best off seasons.
The Yankees had the worst off season in the division, and they took our second best reliever away from us. That's, I mean, that just shows you, you know, that's a bad offseason for them. And it's just top to bottom now, you look at this division, the Rays, probably have the best rotation. The lineups, everybody has, you know, quality in their lineup. The Blue Jays may be more question marks than anybody, but the Rays certainly have question marks. Red Sox have guys coming back, you know, off of injury. The Yankees with Teixeira, Rodriguez had down years. You don't expect those guys to, you know, to be on that cliff. Those guys should come back. And then you look at the bullpens. Obviously, we talked about the Red Sox bullpen being strong, Yankees bullpen being strong with the addition of Soriano, even as ridiculous as the contract is. You know, Toronto did a lot to strengthen their bullpen. And then the Orioles and the Rays have some question marks who's going to fill what roles. But you look at it top to bottom, and I don't see how you cannot say this division is not the best division in baseball. And the fact that we're going to be the defending champions of the division, it doesn't, you know, 2010 is not going to help us in 2011. But the fact that our team has been able to do that two out of the past 3 years, and now the division's only getting better. I mean, I think that's a little bit of a feather to have in your cap.
Right. I mean, this division is like the SEC of college football. But in college football, the SEC, you know, there's 12 teams in it. Six of them are very good. You know, two of them are good, and you've got, you know, the Vanderbilts. You know, in this division,
they're all good.
Yeah. Four of the five are very good. You know, one of them is good.
Good.
Yeah, one's good. I mean, you could put the Orioles, if you want to take the Orioles and put them in the
Central.
NL Central, I'd make them a contender because there's really no clear-cut favorite out there. You know, unlike, you know, with the San Francisco and Philly on the opposite divisions. But this is the toughest in the major sports. This is the toughest division in all of them.
And we're recording this on Sunday afternoon, and it all begins tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yep.
Thank pitchers God. And catchers reporting. All those guys will be out there in Port Charlotte tomorrow. We have first workouts on Wednesday. Fan Fest is coming up this weekend.
The 19th, right?
19th. I'm going to be there. Jason's going to be there. Eric's going to be there. So if you know who we are, you know, we'll be there walking around answering questions if you guys want. And then Monday, the 21st, is the first official day of workouts when, you know, the Rays get to work finally on defending the crown.
Yes, and first game's like February 27th.
Yeah,
February 26th. They've got
day after
a few on TV and a bunch of them on radio.
Birthday,
And then the panic begins for all of us because, as it was last year, from game one to 162, it was pressure, pressure, pressure. If we fell two games behind, I felt the weight of the world. If we
got five games up and then five games behind.
It was a lot easier to watch this team when your expectations
when
were in the gutter.
Bad, yeah.
Yeah, and now just we've this whole podcast has been about the rivals. It just makes you look at it and how much more difficult it's going to be. So, but it's going to be fun. And like I said, it starts tomorrow, goes through, you know, we have a 1 week of preparation and then we get down to business. So for Eric Hammond, Jason Collette, Michael behind the boards, Tommy Ransell, podcast to be named later. Hope to be speaking with you guys a lot more frequently this year and hope to enjoy another division title.
Yes, please.
For the 2011 Tampa Bay Rays.